This is The Women of Letters, a podcast dedicated to the TV show Supernatural and everything fandom. Watch a horror movie right there on my TV. Horror movie right there on my TV. Horror movie right there on my TV. Shocking me right out of my brain. Shocking me right out of my brain. Watch a horror movie right there on my TV.
John and Mary, husband and wife.
Welcome to a slightly drunk post 200th episode of Supernatural Women of Letters podcast. I'm Jules, I think, and I have Amy here. We normally wait a few days or to the weekend after an episode to record, but we're so excited and overwhelmed and full of feels and squee about the 200th episode and beer that we. that we thought we would record now and share that all with you. So, and we both had the day off work because that's the sort of fans we are. Crazy ones.
We both took leave days so we could actually sit here and experience it. Because, I mean, you know, we're a long way away, but we sat here and experienced it with the rest of the fandom, and that was really important to me to do that. Oh, yes. So I took a day off.
Definitely. No, I there's no way I wanted to miss out on it. It was too much. I wouldn't have been doing any work anyway if I was there.
No, exactly. I would have just been completely useless if I was there. It would have just been a joke. So yeah, exactly.
But it's been a wonderful day from the, even starting last night, our time. I mean, people have been so excited online, and there's been all the still interviews and articles coming out.
I mean, I needed a day off just to be able to get through all the articles that were coming out today. I mean,
there was so much
stuff to read.
Special shout out to Laura Prudham of Variety, who did an oral history of Supernatural. So she spoke to current and past cast and writers, going back right to the start with Kripke, and it's an epic story. It takes you about an hour to read. I don't know how many thousand words it is.
It's amazing.
But it's a wonderful history of the show told through these interviews.
And it just goes from the pilot right through. So it's actually really chronologically sort of laid out. It's amazing.
Yeah. Really amazing piece of work. So that'll be linked on the episode page, the front page of the wiki.
Which I'd imagine is going to be a tricky episode page. I was thinking of all the references, my God, that are going to have to link to.
Oh, look, yeah, we've started. So I've started with all the little Easter eggs and other people have been pulling all the various quotes out. So I think we've gone, I've just got a download. So one thing I do is get a download of the subtitles for the episode, the closed captions, and ahead of someone doing a transcript, that helps me get the all the quotes and look for the references, because although I've already we were just talking about how many times we've already watched the episode. There gets to a point where I do actually need to have a break and start typing things. So.
But I don't want to have a break. It's too awesome, and I just want to watch it forever.
Ever and ever. So we had. So when did you watched it along with the East Coast?
I did. I watched the East Coast feed.
So you streamed it?
I streamed it. Yeah, I have to say thank you to William. He knows who I'm talking about, and many of us know William. He's just awesome, and it was a great feed. And I streamed it.
Oh,
and
good.
I just watched it, and just I have to say right from the very, very, very first moment of them going Supernatural pilot created by Eric Kripke was the then and then going into the now. I just was like,
wasn't that wonderful?
I just couldn't believe how wonderful that was.
I didn't even know, like, it also made you think, whoa, how are they, what? And when we talk about meta episodes, I mean, I think we can probably safely say at this point, Supernatural sort of, you know, holding the crown in that
area.
The things they've done. But this, this took us into the show's history, into the fandom history. Look, there wasn't even a picket fence where the fourth wall used to be.
But it didn't feel like it crossed any lines. You know, it still felt true to the characters being in the show. It still felt true to a case of Sam and Dean, you know?
Well, I think that's one thing they've always done with their meta episodes. Their philosophy has been it can't be a very special episode that's unrelated to the rest of the rest of the story. And I think one that does that brilliantly is, and they all do it, but I think Changing Channels did that so well, because, you know, you have all this incredible wackiness of the TV show stuff. And look, that would have been a fantastic episode, and they could have just, that could have just been over somehow and that was the end of the episode. But then you have this whole coda with the reveal of the trickster being Gabriel. Yeah. And, I think a scene with, if you weren't in love with Richard Speight already, that just ripped your heart out.
It was even more.
Oh, because it's just an incredible performance by him in that Ring of Holy Fire. And I think, yeah, you're right. I mean, Supernatural never just sort of puts everything on hold. And obviously we continued this week what had sort of started last week with the boys', emotional reconciliation.
Swoon.
So after that, the then just being that beautiful simplicity of the, sort of first page of the pilot.
It was so beautiful.
And then, we go into the rehearsal of the musical, which just, talk about also took me back. I did probably stupidly post a couple of photos from my high school musical days.
I saw them. Today. I'm really thankful that my storeroom got flooded and I lost all my photos.
I went to a private girls' school, so that was and did musicals, so it was all very, very evocative to me.
I went to a public girls' school, so I was the same. I went to an all girls' school, so I really relate to the all girls' school thing.
And then we got to have the titles being a montage of all the titles ever.
I gasped. I think if there was anybody filming me in my room, I'm just on my own sitting on the couch having like my arms waving in the air.
I know, it was like, it was just fist pump up.
So amazing. It was such a great idea. And, I just totally didn't expect that to, I don't know, I just wasn't even in my realm of thinking, not that I'd overthought the episode, but like it just wasn't even in my realm of thinking about the episode. And when they did that, I was like, oh my god, what a great idea, I can't believe they did that. But it was a wonderful way
those sort of things of acknowledging that this was a landmark milestone episode, so which is difficult to do. I mean, obviously the 100th episode, other than a couple of Easter eggs, didn't signpost it in that way, but so
it was very much a snap in the mythology of that season.
But because of the nature of this episode, that they could do that. And I loved when they had the like theatre-esque light bulb Supernatural. And I think it's Marie goes, yeah, it needs more. I mean, those sort of things are just.
And by the way, I was doing hand actions when I said that.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it's like there's really little things. I mean, the tiny little things like that you just kind of, it's just such a beautiful touch and it just made the episode that much special. Just those tiny little things that I was laughing out loud, all the way through the episode. When I wasn't sobbing, I was laughing out loud.
It worked there were so many visual jokes in there that weren't, and there were jokes in the text. So, we start off with Sam and Dean, they're at the Route 200 motel, in room 200. We get Impala porn, and then we get both the boys in one layer.
Backside porn, I have to just say. That walk of Dean from the back of the Impala to the front of the Impala in those jeans and single layer, and he's not got anything hanging down low. I was just like, whoever planned this scene, if it's you, Robbie Thompson, I don't know, but thank you very much if I just objectify for a moment.
I think we I think we can easily say that.
I appreciated the hell out of that scene.
It was. And I don't think it was any accident that there was some. We saw some porn in the trunk of the Impala.
That was just beautiful. Single layers. It was just the whole thing. It was just like, yep, thank you for thinking of us.
And I have to say, Demon Dean, despite, you know, having been living the high life for a little while, certainly hasn't lost any condition.
Yep, he'd been
taking care of the gun show. Was it the gun show was in town,
and we appreciated the hell out of that too.
And then, of course, we got the wonderful shout out to both the pilot and All Hell Breaks Loose with the trunk POV and the "We've Got Work to Do," which just
makes you just want to squee and burst into tears.
All
in the same emotion. It's just this weird. It's just like, please, guys. It's just so awesome to have that. It's such an icon. I mean, we had it at the beginning of season one and season two, and the end of season two. And, yeah, you know, to have it now in the 200th episode is such a meaningful thing for you know, the fans of Supernatural, that statement. And just the tossing of the gun in the back of the car and the slam, it was beautiful. That's how I want the show to end. But, you know I'm going to be sad when they all die bloody. But
I've always said that would be, you know, if
perfect ending to the
that
show.
Would be a good way for it to end, with it,
we got work,
you know,
to
basically
do.
Not ending. They yeah. just keep. They keep going because
and it just dips to black. Then you know they throw it in the back of the car. Bang, black. We got work to do. Black, and it just ends on black. It's how I've always wanted it to end. I know that Jensen and Jared want to go bloody and, you know, like dying and gasping and stuff. But I just go, no, just throw that weapon in the back of the car and slam the boot, and then we know you're out there somewhere, and we don't have to cry for the rest
trunk
of our
Amy,
lives.
Trunk, Amy.
Trunk.
The Impala is a trunk. Not a boot. Oh, it's bloody Australian.
Boot. It's a boot.
People are listening going, his shoe? What about his shoe? He's throwing his gun in his shoe.
Oh, I snorted. So
sorry. You snorted.
I did.
This is Women of Letters on drugs. No, on beer.
It's on beer.
I don't know what order we're going to do this. Look, I thought all the women who played the girls in the play and that were fantastic.
Oh my gosh, it was so amazing.
Huge shout out to them. Katie Seraf played. She played. Marie, who was sort of the author and who ends up playing Sam at the end, and Joy Regulano, who played Maeve, who was the stage director. I mean, and particularly Katie had to carry a lot of the emotional stuff in the episodes because she's both of, you know, there's funny lines and then she's got to deal with being terrified and being the victim, and she can carry the humour, and then she's got to carry a lot of that emotional weight, sort of Sam and Dean-ish type stuff that's in there as well. So
she did great with the humour too. She was very, very sharp with the humour. And you know, like, comedy is very hard to play, but she did it so well. She did,
oh, look, just and Joy as well, who was just so so dry.
Dry. Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, things like the, you know, oh, no, you're too old to be 17.
I loved her. She was
Bobby Rufus.
So Bobby Rufus. I love Jensen's tweet about that. There were some logistical issues with that statement. Made me laugh. But no, she was so amazingly dry. Even, you know, just so also the way she slighted them when she, like, sort of said to Sam and Taylor, don't touch anything, you know.
She cast shade like no one. And it was,
she was
like
amazing.
So good, really talented comedian, and look, all the other actors as well, and remember they had to cast people who could sing.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think it would have been a casting challenge because you're looking for, you know, women who can believably be playing, you know, well, believably in the TV world, because we know often very old people get cast in. As school kids, but you know, they had to believably look like schoolgirls, and they had to be able to act, and they had
and
to be able to sing.
Comedians as well,
and the whole triple threat,
triple quadruple, because like being a comedian as well as being an actor is, you know, So I think they're amazing, and I think, you know, the fact that they were doing a play within the show as well was really, yes. You know, there must have been so many challenges to taking on a part like that. They did a great job, and they were so likable. You just liked every one of them. I really liked those characters, you know. I was
and
like,
usually with the guest actors, that they're not in every scene, whereas these, you know, particularly Katie and Joy, were in just about every scene. You know, normally they come in and, you know, they're in maybe a third of the scenes, but, you know, in this they were there all the time, and it was fantastic.
It was.
And they were just really likable, and they, you know, of course, they were standing in for us as well to a large extent.
I know.
So we had to like them because they were, you know, they were being a voice of both authors in the big, you know, in one sense, and fan authors as well. So, you know, look, I don't think the genius of Robbie Thompson is under any doubt at this point.
Oh, my gosh. Like, can I just hug him? Because, seriously, I mean, we all know that Robbie gets it, but that this was, like, beyond. And I really wanted to give him big hugs after this episode because he was – I really did, because I just thought he really just, you know, he kind of – he was respectful with everything, because there was a lot of stuff touched on, and there was a lot of stuff taken the piss out of, but it was done in such a way that you could laugh along with it. And if you didn't laugh along with it, blah, is all I have to say. But I'm just going to block you.
Oh, look, but – I know, but, that, you know, and a lot of people, number one, just get anxious anytime the fourth wall's broken. A lot of people get uber anxious anytime anything about fandom is mentioned. And some of that, I think, is with good reason, because generally, although I think it's shifting, you know, shifted somewhat in the last 5 years or so, but, you know, generally in film and media, you know, fans have not been portrayed in a positive way, or with knowledge of, you know, from a fan's perspective or anything. Now, I think Supernatural's always been different, because I think the thing they've done differently is not portray a generic fan.
Yes.
They've portrayed us. So, like, going back to Becky was, you know, in some ways representative of a type of fan, but she was also unmistakably a Wincest writing Supernatural fan. She was, and
Sam Licker, 70, whatever she was.
69, of course.
Oh my God, why could I not remember?
Sam Licker, 69. There's a Becky page on the Super Wiki, you can find a link to her live journal. but, you know, and I think that's been a different thing, and I don't think any other show has done that, and because I love it, I've watched a lot of shows that have gone meta and fourth wall broken, and the few that have mentioned fandom, it tends to be in a more generic way, or the shout outs to fandom are very broad, whereas, you know, God, this was just us. I mean, this was our and, you know, people go, it's like Robbie's been eavesdropping on us.
Who knows? Well, of course he has. And also, you've all been telling him a lot of stuff.
I was going to say, you know all those things we tell him? Yes, he actually heard them.
It's not like he has to eavesdrop. Everybody's tweeting and shit.
That's what I thought. It's like, you know, those 400 tweets he gets in a row. I think he noticed.
Yes,
you know, and everything from, you know, people who know me will not be surprised that I actually weed in my pants a bit with the Adam shout out, because that's one of my, you know, sort of little
noirs
at every con. There's a
Ben's Adam coming back. What about that? Like, that actually made me laugh out loud, because I was just like, oh, I have to talk to Jules about this one, because we've actually taken the piss out of the Adam thing before.
And the fact comes in this really emotional sort of mode.
It's Adam, and the boys just kind of look at each other. It was just really funny. I loved that so much that they Robbie put Adam into it. I thought that was brilliant.
And, of course, you know, of course, the Samulet, which was just,
well, you know,
and again, shows it wasn't just a throwaway line. I mean, he knows, and Robbie knows our nickname for it, and he knows the discussions from all sides about what we think it signifies, why it should come back, why it shouldn't come back.
But the most...
Jensen's comments about it
with breaking his tooth, and she gets his kids hitting my mouth and everything. But you know what?
Team.
I was like, gosh, you know, this is really for deep-seated fans who really read all the stuff. But you know what I really loved about that? I loved what Dean said, in that he said, I don't need an amulet to tell me how I feel about my brother. And, you know, and I thought that was really perfect. And I loved that, you know, Robbie wrote that into the script, because, you know, yeah, this amulet, you know, whatever, but it's you know, that the fans will say it's a representation of the brother's bond, but, you know, I love that Dean said, you know, I don't need that to tell me I love my brother. And I love that. But then on the flip side, I love that he took it with him and hung it on the Impala mirror as well. I was like, this is so much perfect. I think by then I was just sobbing so uncontrollably. It was just ridiculous.
And I'm like, do I start Googling Etsy now to see if someone's made that style of polymer amulet, because I want one.
I know. I love that one. It was all fat. Big. I like
it. I know, these huge horns coming out of it. But I think that's one thing that the script did really well. It could have been sort of a, if it was someone else other than Robbie, but it could have still been good, but it could have been more didactic about sort of saying, no, this is the author's version of how things should be, and I'm setting the record straight. But as you said, he goes, well, on the one hand, yes, Dean doesn't need the amulet, but Dean takes the amulet.
I love that about it. It was really actually very embracive, in that it, you know, sort of said, look, this is your...
Oops.
Sorry.
Up my hand and walked across. Oh my gosh!
I'm just being kidnapped by
literally just like whoosh. My earphones went across the room. Okay, I'm back. What I really loved is that it was actually really embracive, in that it did say, and they had the comment. And I personally loved that Jensen got to say this, because he has copped a lot of shit over the years about, you know, his kind of view on fan fiction, or, you know, that kind of stuff. And I love that they got the chance, him and what was her character's name? I can't remember. Fake Sam.
Marie.
Got to have that conversation where she was like, even if you don't agree with my interpretation, and he was like, well, that's your interpretation, my interpretation. And it was like, there's room for both of them. And I love that was the commentary of this piece. And I actually really love that he got the chance to say that. And I thought that was great, you know, that was actually the commentary of the episode, that there is room for both interpretations.
Well, I think that's, you know, certainly on Twitter, Robbie's, you know, manifesto has always been, it's not a null sum game. We all have our own version of the story, and even just because they're different doesn't mean, you know, they cancel each other out. And as the writer, he said, you know, my version is no more valid than your version. There isn't this sort of authentic version. You can call something, you know, canon or whatever, but that doesn't mean that much, because everyone's going to read that story in their own way. And I think that was in their own voice, and that was the message coming through. And of course, they had that lovely, you know, dig at the writers themselves when you know, Dean says, "Well, I can tell you what happened after Chuck stopped writing," and recants season 6 to 9, at which she bursts out laughing, going, "You know, that's the worst fanfic I've ever heard."
Perfect. That was so funny.
And of course, I just love the way they'd written that as well, because of course it sounds absurd when you write it like that. And you know, we're always going to be grateful for that line of, you know, and I was in purgatory and Sam hit a dog.
And I just loved how matter of fact it. I can tell you, and Dean just plottles it out so matter of factly about what has happened in there. Crazy town life. And you know, I love that Dean actually really wants to tell them that, you know, he wants to actually make them
aware of all that stuff, and you wouldn't think he would, but he does, you know, and I think that's a really kind of cool thing about him.
You know, on the meta level there, what Robbie's saying is, you know, look, the shit we write is as crazy as anything.
Well,
you know,
exactly.
And that in a way was
when you spit it out like that. It sounds ridiculous.
In terms of the writing of, you know, a fanfic and canon, and, you know, I've said this before, if anything's akin to writing fanfic, it's television writing, because, you know, they're playing in someone else's sandbox, if you like. And so I thought it was really nice to sort of have them set alongside each other like that. You know, in this case, saying they're, you know, both ridiculous. But, I thought that was another nice touch. I know a lot of people were very anxious about where it was going to go with commentary on shipping. And, you know, we started off, first of all, with the BM moment.
Oh, my God. Bowel movement?
Yeah, and I think we, Amy, you and I might have to take a moment. BM is not a term used in Australia.
No,
is it?
No, not at
and
all.
Any time I hear it used on a TV show, I'm just like, who, you know, what sort of weird culture calls it a BM? You know, we call it a poo or a shit. You know, So anyway, that's an aside, but it's a cultural thing. And I
I'd never heard of it as a BM being a, I was like, okay. Right. Yeah, no, we don't use that here.
So that always makes me laugh. And of course, it's even funnier when it actually didn't mean bowel movement. It
Thank
meant
goodness.
Brother melodrama.
I thought they were going to say bromant for a moment. I was like, oh my God.
No, I like the fact that he changed it into brother melodrama, because that's exactly
what it is. But that's also what the writers call it, right? They call it the brother melodrama or the boy melodrama. They call it the boy melodrama. Okay. They do. I've read interviews with Zara and stuff like that, when they actually speak about that's what they call it when the boys have a moment, they call it the boy melodrama.
Oh, I'll have to find a source for that.
Yes,
so I
definitely
can...
they're out there. So yeah, I was like, oh yeah, because they you know, that is their little moment, and I love that. And then Dean's like, move apart. Questioning why are they standing so close together. That's so beautiful.
Subtext, but I like. I also like that. I mean, I think Robbie tweeted at one point, you know, you could cut together 42 minutes of the boys' reactions. So I mean, right from that moment when they walk in and see their lives being acted out on stage, and there's that sort of tilted camera thing, as like
I love
tripping.
That like trippy camera stuff. That's really awesome.
Which I just thought was wonderful, and you know, there were so many of those sort of reaction shots, but also the fact what I liked, and if we're talking about, you know, the girls in this school being the stand-ins for fans, you know, they weren't in any, you know, doubt about what they were doing or you know, it was not set up in a way that it was, you know, that they were sort of exasperated about having to explain it. You know, it's like, it's transformative work, you know. It's like, I can do what I like.
I love that they called it transformative works as well.
Yeah, so I think that was another tilt at the hat to not making fans out. And I know some people, again, before had said, oh, these were young women. And I think Carver had said in an interview, you know, that it had sort of hit him when, you know, being at Comic-Con and because that's the only real sort of convention he gets to go to, and seeing these young teenage women who are, you know, uber fans of the show and who are really knowledgeable and smart about the show. And he said, you know, explicitly that's who he wanted to honour with this. You know, he wanted to hold them up as like their, you know, the amazing creativity, not of the old hags like you and I, Amy.
Yeah,
but
Chris O'Dea to him.
Yeah. We'll have to wait till they do sort of Supernatural in a bingo hall or something. or a CD bar, more likely. But, you know, I thought they portraying these, you know, you're all fans of Supernatural, that was not so, you know, the issue Sam and Dean had with it in this is really weird because this is our life moments rather than anything else.
Yeah, yeah. They were, that was their, well, it was their struggle, and their struggle, I think, was the, well, for Dean, was the interpretation of his life as well, you know, like seeing how other people were interpreting his relationships. Well, I think a little bit of a struggle for Dean, but you know, you would expect it to be, that was,
well, after the BM scene, of course, then he's sees the women who are playing Cass and Dean hugging, and again, I love that. It's like, what are they doing? Well, the young people call it hugging.
I know, and that they were actually in a relationship, which I thought was crazy. Yes. Dean's like, what? Oh my god.
You can't spell subjects without S-E-X. At which point I thought, how much time have you spent on Tumblr, Robbie Thompson?
Because well, I think I've seen Robbie that on Tumblr. Spends a lot of time on Tumblr. I think that's perfectly obvious. yeah.
But, you know, and then Sam teasing him about, why is it Destia? Why isn't it Destia?
Destia was just like possibly my favourite thing. I was like, why is it Destia?
What about?
Like, why is it Sastiel?
And what about Sastiel and Samstiel? And what I really liked about that was it put the playfulness back into shipping. It was like, you know, this is something where you might, you know, and we had Dean with the Sam and Dean stuff echo his line from Monster at the end of the book, which was you do know they're brothers,
right?
I
love that. It was basically exactly the same line, you know, you do instead of they do, you know, we're brothers, right?
And she's just like, and she's just like, oh,
I loved how she said reasons. Why are they standing so close? Reasons.
But I think there was such a lovely lightness and playfulness with that. And of course, then you have at the end of the sort of the Dean Cass scene, Jensen's look to camera, which was just,
I love
seriously
that.
That was the point I think I actually fell off the sofa.
I laughed so
and I might have rewatched that more times than is healthy.
I laughed so loud. I like I probably waked everybody in the uniblock. You know, I just laughed so loud. And I love that he specifically tweeted about that was for all you fanfic writers. Wink, wink. And I love that. That was fantastic. It looks I'm like, the dude's looking straight at camera. Oh, shut up. That's so awesome.
And I think what's interesting then is, and I've spent quite a bit of time looking at, you know, fan reaction around the traps, is exactly as we were talking about before, it's been interpreted in all manner of ways. So you've got people going, oh, well, that's Dean/the show showing its disapproval of that. And then you've got an equal number of people going, well, that's Dean going, oh, yeah, that's it. It's happening. And it's funny. I've just been reading all these. You know, have a look on the Destiel tag on Twitter, and there's so many tweets going, well, I'd be, you know, expecting Destiel to be canon by next week. You've got other people going, well, that's it. They've told all the Destiel fans to leave it alone. Then you've got other people going, oh, it was so gorgeous, it was lovely, and I've just exploded in squee. And that's meta within meta, because it just shows that we all have our own story, and you can have all those interpretation based on one look. And I just thought
and he
that,
was naughty
that, you know,
to do
it was,
that, but it was pretty awesome that he did it.
It was very, very gorgeous.
Very gorgeous.
Jensen was, I mean, again, any time you have comedy, I think they both do brilliantly. I mean, everyone knows how brilliant Jensen is, but I think we've often said too, Jared's actually so much more awesome than I think he even gives himself credit for. And I think that's partly because Sam's character is the one that's so less often being comedic, and so when he is, it's fucking hilarious.
Oh, yeah, he was funny in this episode. The whole, you know, when he was like, oh, it's so charming. No, 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 no. It was just so beautiful how he played that. That little moment I thought was just amazing. I was just like, that was perfect comedy timing there. If ever Jared doubts his comedy timing, he should just look at that little piece. But no, he was super funny in this, you know, and it was fun because Sam was kind of, he was curious about it, whereas Dean was just kind of like, what the hell, you know, and it was fun,
but then that's,
you know, and that's how you expect them to be, really.
But as we've seen Dean before with other sort of nerdy things like the LARPing and that, he then gets embraces it and gets into it, and it's, you know, very early on sort of bopping away to the music.
But that's the thing with Dean Winchester, he just rolls with anything, and that's one of the things I really love about him. And I mean, that's one thing that you can put him in, you know, 2014, you can put him in 1940, whatever. Yeah. You can put him in a LARPing, but you know, he just rolls with it. You know, like that's one thing I've always adored about Dean Winchester's character is that he may at first go in going, what the hell? But then as soon as he's like in amongst it, he just rolls with it. And once again, in this episode, he just was kind of, okay, well, this is what it is. And he just goes along with it.
And you know, that speaks to the playful side of Dean's character, which, you know, again, we don't get to see, you know, as often as it'd be nice for us and the character to get to show as well. Mm-hmm. And this was, in a way, a nice episode again for both of them, where we could see them actually, you know, enjoying ourselves. Yeah. Enjoying themselves and us.
Well, we're enjoying ourselves as well.
Absolutely. And you know, just again, so many shout outs to the history of the show, going back to that gorgeous you know, the whole John and Mary bringing Sam home.
God.
And look, shout
out, I think I knew the words by the second time I watched it. I actually sang along with it. I was like, how's that even possible? But it was just so good with them bringing the yellow-eyed demon. It was perfect.
And so later perfect. On, I really loved the way they did, like, the demon smoke and the
God, that was amazing! I loved that.
Yeah, like the staging was, and
I
even
was like,
the
how good is that in staging of the demon smoke just woof out of the mouth? I was like, oh and wow, yeah. That was really cool.
Even their costumes, like them being in black and having the black goggles for black eyes.
Yeah,
like,
cool.
I just thought, well, we've just opened up a whole new world of cosplay.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Although I have to say, the person I'm going as is, there was a sort of a nerdy looking guy in the front seat in the audience with the
plastic poncho
on that got covered in purple goo.
He was the only smart person.
Oh my God, finally a character who wears glasses. And his cosplay is a plastic poncho. I finally
covered
got
in
the
purple
laziest.
Goo.
Yeah, I finally got the laziest cosplay in the world. I'm set.
I've been
looking for it.
I haven't been able to find it lazy enough.
That
guy is so smart, man. He's like the only guy at the end, and he stands up and claps at the end. I'm like, that's because he has the poncho on, and he just protected himself on the goo. He got it a bit on his face, but he protected his clothes.
Shout out to Jerry Wanick and the crew for doing the, you know, the set design of the set of the set.
Yeah.
It was so clever. And the, you know, the Uber motel room, you know, the like hyper real motel room. I mean, how amazing that you get to do a set of a set.
I loved Mary on the ceiling. I mean, that's always going to be my favorite thing, I think. One of my favorite things.
Now, I'll have to look up, because I am sure someone at a con did a version of that. Not
really?
That big, but had the piece of board around her face.
That is so
I'm sure.
Cool.
Unless I'm hallucinating, which is quite possible, I'm pretty sure that I've seen someone do something similar to that. And as I said, I think, you know, there's a whole lot of there'll be a lot of schoolgirl cosplay coming up, which is something to be embraced.
Jules.
I also have to start carding people when I talk to them at cons, though. And moving on. What else was fantastic?
Everything. Everything was fantastic.
I took the first time we see the creature with the gloriously drunk teacher, and shout out to all my teacher friends. I thought of various friends of mine who were teachers in that with the drunk teacher.
Well, I really she's probably when they went to the room.
She's probably at a liquor store or in a bar or both.
But then they went to her office and there's just bottles there. I'm like, I'm sitting there going, the teacher has bottles just sitting out in the room. This teacher's really gone bad. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Go on. I was going to say, the only thing, I was a little disappointed I didn't see more robot. And I love that Robbie put that in there.
I was hanging out for the act, you know, the acting out of space. And, of course, that's been mentioning the robots and the ninjas in outer space is something Robbie has often tweeted about his desire to do, you know, to do something in outer space. And in fact, he got close with Pac-Man Fever, where it was going to open on a spaceship, but they ended up changing that. I just thought, you know, that was just – and I love the noises the robot head made. And I'm also taking that as a –
it was so great.
I'm also taking that as a Stonehenge apocalypse shout out to robot head on the moon.
It's a robot head. Yeah, I really loved the robot, and I was like, oh, I really wanted to see the robot and how it played out in the story. See, I'd actually like to see the stage show. Like, I think they should just do it.
Oh, I tweeted that. I'm like, where's the whole libretto? Like, so if people haven't found out by the time we post this, the songs, full versions of the songs from the show will be on iTunes the day after the episode, and there is also a new Supernatural soundtrack album coming out. So, yes, the songs will be available, but, yes, I would like to stage the whole musical. I think we need to be working on that, fandom.
I think that would be great. I was really like, I want to see this musical, man. I want to see the whole damn thing. It was really good. And I loved the whole stage design with the, when they, you know, pulled the curtains away at the beginning to show the road in the background. And it was, you know, so well thought out and so beautifully thought out. And, you know, an interesting thing, I think, for the production crew to do would have been, you know, to actually have to create like the theater environment and then create like the stage show environment within that. It must have been a very interesting, challenging, but also interesting thing for them to do. I thought it was fun, but I just really loved the way that they portrayed the road, and you know, it was really cool. And the sort of cardboard cutout Impala was awesome, and yeah, they did such a great job on it.
Yeah, they certainly did. And then we have, you know, the songs themselves, which were just absolutely
catchy.
Fantastic. So
super catchy.
Catchy. I'm sure they'll be sung at whenever fans gather now. We had the beautiful lullaby version of Carry On My Wayward Son, which
I love that.
There's been a version like that around for a while. And, I mean, you know, God, if you did not tear up at that moment, then you are
dead inside. Yeah, exactly, right? You're dead inside. I was sobbing by then. Because, I mean, that song means so much to us. And whenever you hear the words, and you hear the words, you know, like, lay your weary head to rest and, you know, don't you cry no more. We think of the brothers because we want that to happen for them one day. I mean, whether that's when they're dead or whatever, we want them to find some kind of peace. We want them to lay their weary heads to rest and not to cry anymore, for Christ's sake, you know. So, and then to have that so beautifully sung in by those gorgeous voices in that form. Yeah. But to also have Sam and Dean, you're watching it and there's close-ups of their faces and Sam kind of almost a little tiny like smile kind of sneaks in and Dean just kind of looks down, you know, and you can see that they're actually listening to the words. And the thing about this episode that really punched home for me was that I really, and we've talked about this, Jules, a lot, I really love it when we have episodes that reflects back to the boys, their relationship. And this was like the prime episode that was doing it. It wasn't just reflecting back to the boys, their relationship, but reflecting back to the boys how important they are and what they do. And, they have fans, for Christ's sake. You know, okay, these people don't actually know they're real, but, at the end they knew they're real. Again, they actually are seeing people interacting with their stories and thinking that they're amazing and awesome, and then they're actually seeing their relationship and how people see how important their relationship and the love within their relationship is all reflected back on them. And I think from where the brothers are now, that's such an important thing. And you know, I honestly don't think we could have got to this point without seeing them struggle, the kind of struggle that we've seen them have over the last couple of seasons, to get to this point where they actually can now go, well, we really do want this because we've been through such shit. We really, this is a really important thing, and then see their lives reflected back at them and realize just how important their relationship is and how beautiful it is. Not that I loved probably again.
I think we did get that, because I think we also had, the measure of, the gorgeous song "Single Man" tear, where you get
that broke my heart though. Because it's what we all want to say to Dean Winchester.
But we get that from both, Sam and Dean talking about. In song, which is often how song works in musicals, is truth telling and commenting, on things that can't be said. And here they both get to see it. And then, we have that lovely moment with the final scene with musical Sam and Dean in the car and when they talk about, this is where we're meant to be, and together just out on the road, the two of us against the world. And then when real Sam just turns to Dean and says what she said, and that's just,
that was perfect.
I remember you and I speculating because Carver had said there was something beyond a bro hug in this episode.
I think that was it.
And I think the both of them seeing through song, if you like, their brother in this other way. And then that moment. And then of course we have their final moment in the Impala when Dean gets the fake amulet out and hangs it up. And I mean that, we can have that as a wordless scene. And we know that, we know that they've both heard earlier, Sam heard Dean's discussion with Marie about, what it meant and everything. So that was special. And then we get to the very, very final scene and talk about putting a friggin' button on it. I do not think an episode has ever been buttoned with as much buttonness as Rob Benedict buttoned that scene. The appearance of Rob as Chuck buttoned that friggin' scene like it was on a bloody Chanel fucking jacket.
Yeah.
I mean, if you weren't broken by that point, and
it's like
even
Chuck.
The tension, like I know, we're all thinking, as it's like the publisher's here or whatever, and we're all thinking, could it be? Could it be? And you see a sleeve
and it took a long time to do that reveal. That was a long reveal. That was great.
And then when you just see his gorgeous face and it's like, what did you think of it? It's like, not bad.
Yeah,
not bad.
I mean, it's like God just came down to watch it. God came to watch that production.
I am sure there'll be endless fan speculation about what that means. It doesn't have to mean it. It was just perfect as it was. It doesn't have to have anything implications outside of that. And the reason I think it was even, and again, kudos to Robbie and his, knowledge and experience of fandom, because he's been to a few cons now, both officially at LeakyCon, and he's sort of dropped in at a couple of creation cons unofficially. And, he's met with fans at various events is that what he understands is that Chuck is really important. Like, and you know, even the fact that they use Rob on the voiceover for the retrospective. I mean, people know that right up until the, you know, the finale of season five, and that monologue, you know, has us all bursting into tears. Yeah. After about two words. But I think Robbie also understands that we have a relationship with Rob that's outside of and beyond the show, that's developed through conventions, and that part of fandom, that we've been with this man when he had a stroke and nearly died.
And that also his,
you know, relationship with other actors on the show as well as fandom, so that, you know, on one level, a casual fan can watch that and go, oh, how cool that, you know, they brought Chuck back. And then there's another part of fandom that
realises it's so massively important to have him there.
Yeah, and that it has another meaning, you know, a whole other meaning, or, yeah, you know, for us, and we have a whole other relationship. And I think that was another layer of meaning in this whole the whole episode was about the sort of iterative nature of our relationship with the show, that it, yeah, were that it's us watching them and they're watching us, and that's for the show, but also outside of the show we have, you know, relationships that exist now, you know, above and beyond the show within fandom, and the actors have relationships. And, you know, here I was I don't know what the word is for Skype drinking, drink Skyping. You know, with Ryan Curtis, who works on the show, and I said that. I said, "Oh wow, this is like we're doing something really meta somehow." As you know, so I here am I as a fan
watching the show
with someone who worked on the episode.
FYI, just let him know that the transition from Boys into Impala to Impala going up the road at the end was,
yes,
so beautiful.
I will let him know. That was
so VFX. Beautiful. I mean, that was all VFX. And you could, I mean, you know, you could see it was all VFX.
You know what
but
else?
But in the best possible way. But it was just like,
you,
oh,
know what else?
Fuck
was
off.
VFX.
That was so, oh, I just swore big time. But that was so beautiful and zoom straight up the road. And I was like, oh, just
into
really.
The sunset.
Oh, into the sunset. It just made me gasp. But it was beautifully done. The transition from Sam's window through to the, yeah, you know, it was gorgeous. It was gorgeous.
One bit you mightn't realize was VFX when the Scarecrow monster, who, by the way, was played by John DeSantis, who played the Golem and previously was in Ghostfaces.
Tall Tales, wasn't it?
Oh, no, Ghostfaces. No, Ghostfaces, sorry. Yep, sorry.
Right.
Sorry. Getting my Ghostfaces mixed up.
When he's on the stage and he, you know, he explodes, and that's a VFX. But his branch hands were all VFX.
Were they really? That's fantastic.
They were all VFX.
They were great.
Yeah, and I they just look like sticks to me. But that was all VFX.
Hand sticks,
amazing.
Yeah. Very, very good.
Hands. I'm like, well, why didn't you just stick sticks in there? But
yeah,
anyway.
No,
but yes,
God,
I think the whole when they started mentioning, you know, about the 200th and that it was going to be a love letter to fans, part of me sort of did a double gulp, because I thought, you know, you're sort of setting yourself up in a way by saying that, and immediately, you know, and there were reactions from people who were disappointed that, you know, Misha wasn't in the episode and Mark Shepherd weren't in the episode. And I thought, you know, you're putting down a big, you're setting yourself up for a big accomplishment here by saying it's a love letter to fans. And we know they know fandom. You know, there are very few things that make all of us happy. In fact, there are very few things that even make some of us happy sometimes. But I have to say, looking across the reaction of fandom, I think overall, I think people really, at the very least, took it in the spirit it was intended, and the reaction overall. And, of course, I've seen, you know, people who thought it was a piece of shit, and people who had various other complaints, because that's fandom.
And I blocked them. I'm going to be honest about that. I don't have any room for that in my life.
But, you know, I think overall people really, you know, really took it and saw the love in it. And as I said, you know, not many times in my life I'm going to see my fandom represented like that in my show.
Look,
ever again. probably.
No, never. But, you know, like, it was just, I just felt like a drip love. I mean, I didn't find anything at all that made me question the fact that they were understanding the love that the fandom has in every way that it has it. The love for the show that the fandom has in every way that the fandom has it, you know, and however the fandom wants to interpret it, they were recognizing that fact. And I just thought it was amazing because of that. I found it didn't feel exclusive to me. It felt like it said, look, we know that you do some weird and funky shit out there, man. And, you know, we may not necessarily agree with your interpretation, but, you know, we roll with it and we appreciate the fact that you still love the show. And, you know, this all comes from your love of the show, and we appreciate that. And, you know,
it was a big old orgy of love out there.
It was, man. And it just felt like that to me, you know. And I, you know, to be honest, I don't understand how you can see it any other way, but hey. But I just adored it. And I mean, apart from the fact that it was funny as all hell, and it was witty script. It was so smart. And that's why I kept saying, this is smart, man. And we know our show is smart. We know our show is, you know, super smart. But this was one of the smartest things I think I've ever seen it do. And it was clever script. It was beautifully told. It was, you know, wonderful performances. And on top of all of that, it was just absolutely heart-achingly emotional that, you know, like I said, I sobbed. I sobbed in, you know, towards the end of this, because it was just everything I wanted this episode for it to be, it was, and then it was a little bit more than I expected. Mm. And I was just like, I can't believe that you guys love us as much as we love you. And I just, it was such a, you know, it was really wonderful to see. And
I think I'm going to watch it like five hundred times this week, it might
have been Robbie who mentioned, or maybe it was Phil Segrecia. You know, there aren't many shows who would take a milestone episode like the 200th and dedicate it to something like this, which, to be honest, is, you know, as much as the relationship we have with the show and its success is doing meta, is still a big risk. It's still going outside of the box. You know, it's still part of it is, you know, certainly the sort of thing that only a segment of the very engaged fandom will get. And, you know, there are probably people out there who are like, you know, what the hell's Destiel?
There's a lot of people out there who do what the hell is Destiel.
Believe it or not, fandom, not everyone is the people on your timeline. So, you know, there were risks in that way, risks about how it'd be received. I know that Jensen said when he first saw the script, he, you know, sort of, what did he say? You know, sat down in Jeremy Carver's office and said, what the fuck?
But then
apologised.
Yes.
He said, I should never have done that. You know, so,
I love that he did that. That was just, I thought that was a beautiful moment of honesty from him, where he was like, I just read that and went, what are we doing? Went to Carver's office and said, what are we doing? He told us what we're doing. And I went, okay. He was like, he came on board with that. And then he says, you know, and I should never have gone to Jeremy's office. And I'm sorry I did that, Jeremy. You know, and I think that was an amazing moment from him. I mean, the man is nothing if not honest.
Yeah, awesome. No, I just thought
that he's awesome as, you know, well as and, honest. And
so
everything else.
I think we can take that as read, Amy.
I'm so sorry. I got a little gushy.
I did love how blonde Dean's hair was in the musical.
That's what I said. He's fanfiction blonde.
I was going to say, I was taking that as a huge shout out. I'm surprised there wasn't a whole side conversation about the actor wearing green contact lenses to get the emerald orbs happening.
No, but just as a blonde, I was like, fanfiction blonde, because everybody's like, Dean's blonde hair in fanfiction. It's like, when has his hair ever been blonde? But anyway.
Oh, and it was a huge. I remember.
Blonde.
And in early fandom, we ended up on the there used to be, well, I think it's still going, a site called Fandom Wank, where big fandom disputes would end up documented. And one of our early ones that we ended up there for was a huge fight that broke out across fandom about the colour of Dean's hair. Was it blonde? Was it light brown? Was it sort of chestnutty blonde highlights?
Look, you know, I don't think it's blonde, but I would call him fair. Can we just be general and call him fair? Come on, he's pretty fair. Like, he's pretty white, except for tonight, where they obviously tanned him up within an inch of his life. But I think
that's because we just saw some more skin than we had for a while,
Come on, man. He's pretty damn brown. But, you know, he's usually pretty fair.
Did they have new suits on?
No, I thought that dark blue suit, dark blue tie, dark blue shirt was an ensemble we'd actually seen before from Dean. I thought it was when the, First Blade episode, in the, Men of Letters First Blade episode, that guy, Magnus episode, and the, the woman in the museum hit on him. He was wearing like the dark suit, the dark shirt, the dark tie. I thought it might have been the same ensemble. I don't know. I'd have to, you know, screen match it. But I thought we'd seen that before. I've seen the dark on dark on dark before. And then when we next saw him, he was in a different outfit. The second day he was in a lighter shirt and a different tie, it's a different stripe. I did pay attention.
I'm sure you did. I'm not sure what else we can say that was because it really was an episode of feels, I think. Of course, many, many gorgeous references in the text. We had shout out to everything
X-Files.
From
I Want to Believe,
X-Files, Kim Rent, Kim Manners, Rent. Terminator.
Kindergarten
I did
Cop.
Love Kelly O. Oh yes, yes. I did love the goddess saying, "This is no meandering piece of genre dreck. It's epic." I think that needs. I wanted to put most of the lines on a T-shirt. I did say the title of Cass's song. I'll just wait here. Which, again, the actor
who played
Cass.
That song was so fantastic.
Was so spot on. And that, like, to think that Robbie, because he said he rewatched the first five seasons, and to think, you know, of all of them, he picked that scene from the end and he had it down so perfectly.
That song.
And what a
wonderful
song. And I did think that actress was just nailed the castness.
She was so cast.
I definitely could have watched all of those actors actually put on the whole musical for sure. Particularly because they said they were going to have tentacles. Might be the only tentacles.
Tentacles and robots.
Probably the only tentacles I'll ever get on the show.
They will, but they were a shout out for you. I'm sure of it.
Well, I'll always take tentacles wherever I can get them.
I'm pretty sure that was it.
Speaking of shout outs, there was a shout out to Susie Hinton with the line about, "Well, I told you we should have put on the Outsiders."
Yeah.
Susie being a regular visitor to the set and big fan of Supernatural. So I'm about to go and spend the rest of the night hunting down all those Easter eggs to put on.
I'm
going
to watch it again.
On the wiki. I will be watching it more times. I'm hoping someone, I'm not sure what time when they say iTunes tomorrow.
I don't know. Is it international?
This is the problem.
I did ask Todd that, but he hasn't got back to me.
No, it could just be US because that's
I do have friends who have offered to assist me.
I'm sure fandom will come to our rescue. It would be lovely to see it sort of, you know, hit the top of the charts in the US tomorrow.
I want to know what the songs are called.
Oh, they had them. I've got them.
Do you?
Yes, just a sec. Let me tell you. Jay Grisker, the composer. I think the titles were pretty straightforward. They were like One Man Tear, The Road So Far, I'll Wait Here, and Carry On, obviously.
Okay.
And I think So I think you can buy the first three, and then I'll wait on. It's going to be a free download. So I am sure they will be all over, and we will be singing them for forever and ever. Ryan did
They're
say
very
that.
Catchy.
Yeah, Ryan said that they were all singing them on set for weeks. They couldn't get them out of bed. And then Phil Segrisha came back up to direct again. He had some still on his phone and started playing them, and everyone was like, "No, we've just got that beat out of our ears." So I think all in all, what a wonderful thing. What a wonderful show to be part of.
And, you know, what a wonderful show to be part of. And I finished this episode, I was probably about halfway through, when I was just thinking, I'm so happy and proud to be part of this thing and to be part of this fandom who were just going ape shit over this episode. And I was watching them all tweet this amazing love, and then, you know, the cast and the crew and everybody tweeting amazing love back at us. And I thought, you know, it's such an amazing thing to be a part of, and I feel really blessed to be a part of this. And an episode like
so
this, yep, and an episode like this makes me really feel so blessed to be a part of this, to experience an episode like this, to experience a 200th episode of a show that I'm in love with and have been in love with since episode one, and then to have this episode be something that just sings to my heart so much that just makes me want to burst and cry and, you know, cheer. And, you know, I feel really lucky. And I think, you know, we're really lucky to have this show, and we're really lucky to have these people in our lives, even in the smallest way that we do. And, you know, all the other people in our lives who are a big part of our lives, you know, it's an amazing thing. And, you know, we really are blessed.
We are. We certainly are. Thank you for listening to a very in the moment podcast.
Very in the moment.
200.
I decided on 15 minutes before it happened.
Yes, I was moved. I was moved, and I thought, let's do this. Let's do this now. We'll probably have further thoughts on it down the track anyway, but I thought it is for me, it's an episode of love and feels,
love.
And best to capture that in the moment when we're
so much love.
Effused with it before we go back to being analytical and
I'm never going to be rational
as we always are on these podcasts.
Not going to be analytical about this episode ever in my entire life. I'm always just going to be in love with it.
Yeah, no, I mean, as you said, it's an amazing gift. And reminder, November 12th, which Wednesday, wherever you are in various places, just because Robbie Thompson isn't awesome enough, his first story in the Marvel verse, which is a steampunk Spider Lady story with artist Dennis Medry, comes out on the 12th of November in Spider-Verse number 1. So rush out and get that, because it's a steampunk spider lady. I can't imagine how awesome it's going to be. I can't wait to get my copy. And then coming out in February, he has the new series Silk, which is about Cindy Moon, who basically becomes Spider-Woman at the same time Peter Parker became Spider-Man, but she's sort of been in stasis for 20 years, and it's going to be a story all about her series. So Robbie will be big stuff in the Marvel-verse, and then I'm hoping one day we'll be squeeing about his movie. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Thank you very much, Robbie Thompson.
Thank you, Robbie, for writing a really beautiful episode.
And for putting up with us. If I was you, I probably would have written something slightly more snarky.
And thank you, Jensen and Jared, for just being amazeballs and just being with us for so long and dedicating so much of your time to us. And, you know, we know the sacrifices that you make, and we appreciate the hell out of it. And when we see episodes like this, we know you love us anyway, but, you know, it just confirms that you do. And so thank you.
And we'll be back sometime in the near future.
We will be.
When we've come down a bit. So thank you for listening.
Thank you. Bye, fans.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be
don't you cry no